Right. Hello and welcome to episode 15 of the RepliChat podcast. I hope you all lovely listeners are excited for today's episode. I know I am. I've had lots of messages from people expressing how excited they are and how much they're looking forward to this one. So before I introduce today's guest, I have got a little bit of housekeeping to do. First up, I've got clutch number 3 in the incubator. So that was pretty exciting. The pairing's a butter fire to a banana fire. However, it turns out the dad isn't just a butterfire, there's something else going on, and between me and an army of internet reptile friends, we can't ID the dad at the moment, so it's throwing a spanner in the works of IDing clutch number 1, because there's loads of babies, and I don't know what they are, but it's all part of the fun, so hopefully that will unlock some of those secrets. Talking of hatchlings, clutch 2 was an absolute banger of a clutch, but I say to myself. Every animal was at least a 3-gene animal, and they all were a calico combo of some description. And my wife has already chosen and named a holdback from that clutch. So if you want to go and see it, go to my Instagram, because there's loads of photos on there. Next on the list, get your diaries out, because on November 11th is the date for the next ARC show, the Amphibian and Reptile Club show. I'm really excited because I'm going to be vending for the very first time as well. I'll be sharing my table with Ben from Rocky Ridge Reptiles and his son Noah. So between us, we'll have some Royals, some Cresties, and I think Ben is bringing some Leechies too. So if you do want to attend the ARC show, go and find them on either Instagram or the Amphibian and Reptile Club group on Facebook for details on how to purchase your tickets. If you attended the last one, you'll definitely want to come to this one. It's at a new location, a few miles further down the road. But the venue is double the size and they've got plenty of parking. And for those of you that don't drive, it's also only a few minute walk from the train station. The official location will be released nearer the time, but I can tell you at the moment that it's in the Sittingbourne area of Kent. So hopefully I'll see you guys there. I'm going to have Marv and Jake, who are the organisers, on the show in a couple of weeks to talk about it a bit more too. Moving on. My headphones are being weird today. On to the main event. The reason you're all here today and have tuned in, I was going to come up with some sort of big hype intro like I like to do normally. But to be honest, if you're into Royals, you know who Gavin is. So without any further ado, let's get Gav from Balls to You into the chat. Hello, mate.
I'm very well. How are you?
I'm good. Can you hear me? I can hear you absolutely fine. I'm just going to take my headphones out there because they are not working properly today. So I'll do it with a speaker instead. I'm not sure what's going on. That should be working now. Just say something for us, Gav, so I can hear you again.
Good afternoon to everyone in the chat.
Perfect. There's lots of people in the chat as well, which is nice to see. So thank you all for coming along. It's lovely to see you all. Who we got in the chat quickly? We've got KNC Royals, Aspiring Ball Python, Stefano Di Nicola, S&J Royals, M&J Logo Design. Oh, there's lots of people in there. That's awesome. Fantastic to see. Thank you very much, guys, for tuning in.
Thank you.
Yeah. So, Gav, thank you very, very much for coming on. You have been on my list of guests I wanted to get on for a while now, and I finally got the courage to ask you to come on.
Thanks for having me on.
If you haven't listened before, I like to start the podcast with a little section called Get to Know. It's basically a few quick fire questions. They don't need long answers. It's just to get us warmed up and into the podcast properly. So cool. If you're happy, I'll get started.
Yep, let's go.
Your first exotic pet?
Corn snake.
The most unusual species you've ever kept?
Nothing too crazy, probably Probably just a crested gecko, something like that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, nothing too crazy.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Your favourite non-ball python exotic animal?
I really love the rhino iguanas, Uromastix, and a few venomous snakes like eyelash vipers and stuff like that.
I'm a big fan of eyelash vipers. I really like those.
Yeah.
Money, space, legality, time, no issue. What is an animal, not necessarily a reptile, but an animal in general that you'd love to be able to keep?
I'd love to have some sort of wolf.
Oh, okay, that's cool.
Yeah, I'd like to have a wolf. Not necessarily, you know, not a hybrid, a purebred wolf.
Cool. Yeah, no, definitely. Favorite morph in your collection at the moment?
At the moment, I'm really loving the redhead gene at the moment. I've hatched some stuff from that and it's very interesting. So that's apart, obviously the bang is up there, but the redhead is really doing some unusual stuff. So yeah.
Nice. And in your opinion, what's the most overrated morph?
Mandarin.
Okay, cool. Right, moving on from those, we've got a few little this or that questions. They're exactly what they are. So beach or mountains?
Beach.
Sun or snow?
Sun.
Vacation or staycation?
Let's go different. Let's be staycation.
Nice. Night in or night out?
Depends who with, but definitely a night in.
Yeah, I'm a night in person. Early bird, night owl, or permanently exhausted pigeon?
Permanently exhausted pigeon.
Yeah, I think most reptile keepers are. There's a lot going on, isn't there?
Yeah.
And the last question in the get to know, which is the most important one, is what is your favourite biscuit?
Biscuit?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm a bit of a biscuit freak, so I do like obviously the Biscoff stuff at the moment. And if we had to go for an old favourite, we'd have to go for something like a custard cream.
Yeah, nice. A classic, but they go well over a cup of tea, don't they?
Oh, yeah, coffee.
Brilliant. So that's the get to know section done. I like it. It's a nice little icebreaker, gets us all warmed up and chatting.
Cool.
So we'll dive straight in, really. I know you've told the story on the podcast before, but if you could give us and the listeners a little lesson into Gavin, the reptile keeper. So what was your first reptile experience that you can remember? And then how did that evolve into what Ball Studio is today?
I remember a friend of mine, his dad used to be a keeper and a breeder. And I remember going to his facility and it was a room full of vivariums. It was a building that was built out in the back of his garden. You go through the first door, you'd be in the rodent room, which was like cages, like hamster cages full of rodents. And then you go through that into the snake room. That was really my first interaction with a full breeder keeper, you know, facility experience. And I often drive past that house and I see the building and I'm like, oh, I wonder if he's still there, you know. So yeah, that was my first experience.
Okay, and then how would you say you, from that experience, I imagine you were you quite young when that was the experience?
I'd got to be in about between 9 and 12, something like that.
Right? Okay, and then how did that sort of evolve into where you are now? Like the brief history, because obviously...
There's a number of years to go through. It just evolved, like anything else, you know, you start to see things on TV, you start to see certain species, and you know, obviously people like Sir David Attenborough, and then you've got obviously Steve Irwin and all the great people just sort of led your interests, and then it sort of opened up a bit of a doorway when I started to realize there was you know, the breeding side of things or the keeping side of things was available to me. And then that's it. Then it was just, just open the floodgates.
Yeah, it definitely is a floodgate situation as well.
Definitely.
So going sort of keeping with the history at the moment, What was your, obviously, I know that you said you got your first few royals for, in return for fixing some cars.
Yeah.
Which I think is brilliant, to be honest. If I could go and fix people's cars for free snakes, I'll do it.
Yeah. Listen, if anyone wants to come and work for me and they want to work for snakes, I'm happy to paint snakes as well.
So can you remember what your first ever pairing was? And how did you find the whole experience the first time you bred royals?
Yeah, so the first pairing was a pure accident pairing. I used to keep him vivariums and I used to keep them together. And I realised one of the snakes, and because I didn't know how to sex at that time, so it was just a case of, well, I was told it was a female and there's two females in there and everything was good. As it turns out, one was a male, one was a female. And they were just literally a pair of normals. And that was my first experience. I gave them back to my friend who I had them from originally, who worked at the pet shop, at the reptile shop. So I just gave them back. She maternally incubated them. I just let them do their thing, you know. My first pairing regarding trying to hit something was I had a pair of posset albinos and posset pieds. The posset pied stuff was really expensive at the time. The albino gene had sort of made its big money and it was on this decline regarding the cost. So I managed to pick up a pair of het albino and then another group of het pied. Needless to say, none of them proved out.
That's a shame. That is a shame. So the clutch in the vivarium, did you make the conscious decision to maternally incubate, or did you look into it and decide you wanted to incubate that way, or was it a case of there wasn't really any information and that's what you went with?
Yeah, there wasn't much information, but when I spoke to my friend at the reptile shop, he was a bit younger than me, so he asked the guy who owned the reptile shop, his name was Martin, he asked him what I should do, and he basically said, look, unless you've got an incubator, just let them do their thing. And that's exactly what I did. And looking back now, I then realized why she'd moved a hide around the viv. You know, I was like, what, you know, and every time I put it back, she'd move it again. So it was clearly obvious to me she wanted to nest in that area. And yeah, it was quite a surprise. To see her sat on these round things, and when I realized there were eggs, I just quickly made the phone call.
Definitely. And can you remember how many eggs there were, and was it 100% successful as a maternal incubation?
There was about 6 to 7 eggs, I think. Obviously, nothing crazy hatched out, just all normals. Yeah. But at the time, you know, it was like, wow. And the minute they hatched out, I sort of scooped them up, took them to the reptile shop, and then they took over from there. So I never really had the experience to, you know, house them, feed them, get them going. But that certainly was a spark, if you like. And then after she gave the eggs up, or after I took the babies away from her, she certainly was a different snake. Her feeding response was just crazy. So,
Quite an experience, especially for your first time. I know it wasn't a plan, like you say, it wasn't planned, but to go through them, like I'm on my 5th season this year, and I've been sort of in and out since I was like 15, so it's like 15 years basically, in and out. And I wouldn't go for a maternal incubation. I'm not confident enough to do that. So the fact that it was successful, I know it was like, I'm going to say a little bit lucky, but that's definitely a fantastic way to get started, I suppose.
Yeah, I have done maternal incubation obviously after that with a particular pairing. Just I was away at the time. I come back and I didn't even realize she'd laid. I'd gone in to check the waters, and because I checked them before I went away, come back, checked them, and there she was sat on a clutch of eggs. So I didn't know how long she'd been sat there on the egg. So I thought, you know what, I'm just going to leave her go through the process. But it was really stressful because I just kept opening the drawer, making sure she was okay, making sure she hadn't kicked anything out, you know, sort of checking on her.
It introduces a whole new worry, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Because normally you the eggs are in the incubator, you can sort of forget about those, and then your focus is on getting the girl back onto food. And obviously, she sat on eggs for 2 months. That's a whole new thing to worry about.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if I had a webcam in there, it would have been quite interesting, because I did note that she would. So what I did was I sort of prepared the area, like where a water bowl was. I sort of cleaned it out a little bit. And I put down, because I was on paper at that time, put down some fresh paper. And I'd noted that she'd been out and away from the clutch. So when I'd noticed that she'd been away from the clutch and then gone back to it, because obviously you could see the marks where she'd been, I was a bit like, all right, okay. So maybe they don't sit on them for the longer period. You know, they do come off. And like I said, you can feed them as well while they're maternally incubating. They will take eggs. They will take feed while they're sat on the eggs. So that's pretty interesting as well, to know that they will still feed.
To be fair, it is something I'd quite like to have a go at some point in the future. Mm-hmm. But like I said, I wouldn't be confident at the moment to do it. But yeah, definitely something that would be interesting to do. Talking of producing snakes, you are very well known, I'd say, in the UK, probably in other places in the world as well, but obviously I speak to most people in the UK, for producing some incredible looking animals.
Thank you.
Just a quick scan for your Instagram, like literally I looked for it an hour ago just to keep up to date. There's a few morphs on there that aren't necessarily on everyone's radar, but are awesome. So I looked through a few posts, and we obviously you got Bang, which is something that you are pushing, and it's incredible. And you got Motley on there that I noticed. And Genex. I know Genex is sort of, it's been around for a while, but you don't see many people working with it. And you got into Puzzle as well. So we'll start with Bang. So how's the Bang project going for you? How's it going? We'll start with that, I guess.
I've just hatched the last Bang clutch for this season. And Bang does not disappoint. The two animals that I've hatched have got yellow belly in them, and it's just a gene that is, you cannot underestimate it, because this gene for me is such a powerful gene and very underrated, considering like when we spoke about the Mandarin, when you asked me what's overrated. You know, Mandarin clowns are going for like 5K. And I do know there's a lot of Mandarin clowns that aren't really Mandarin, you know. So it's very easy for people to miss ID when they're working with particular projects. The Bang, you cannot miss ID at all.
Right, okay.
It will slap you in the face, and there will be no questions that it isn't, you know, is that Bang? Isn't it Bang? You know,
it's a definite, like, you can't miss it.
Yeah, and some of the people from the States who are working with it. Can you hear me?
Go on, carry on.
So some of the people who are working with it over in the States are really excited as well, dropping messages, sharing information. And, the Bang for me this coming season, it's just about working the project, you know. But this coming season, there's going to be some real heavy-hitting animals, which will... definitely get the world's attention if it hasn't already. You know what I'm saying?
Well, it's definitely, every time I seem to stumble across the pictures, I always stop and have a really good look. And like you say, they do hit you in the face as well. They are incredible looking. Motley, Genex, and Puzzle as well. What's going on with those in regards to projects that you've got going on at the moment?
So the animal which contains Motley, I'm not sure. So I got that from Morph Matrix, Toby. And if we go back probably about 8 years, something like that, there was a guy called Jason Barnard, I think his name was. And he was basically a gecko breeder. And he brought some animals from Crystal Palace. I believe they were a male and female pastel het clown.
Right.
Anyway, he bred these together and started to produce these really crazy clown combos. And at the time, a lot of people thought that he'd got a different line of clown. And the animals that came from the pairing kind of didn't make sense. However, when I saw the animals in person, they were actually granite and the gene that we call Motley. We didn't call it Motley at the time. It was just an unknown gene. Motley puts a lot of blushing down the dorsal and washes out the pattern. And I did an Instagram reel probably about last week or the week before regarding all the Motley combos and the Granite combos, which came from the first lot of pairing back in the day with Jason Barnard. And the animal, the female that I've got. So at the time, so when I saw the animals at the Doncaster show, I was speaking with Jason and I nearly brought into the project. But those animals got scooped up and kind of moved around the UK. And some of the animals had prior to that been sold around the UK. Anyway,
right.
And then it got called Motley, but there was Granite attached. So you've got a Granite, which was the co-dominant Granite. So you've got Granite, Super Granite, Motley. Now, I didn't see anything that was Super Motley. There are people out there saying there is a Super Motley. I don't know. But I picked up this female from Toby over at Morph Matrix, and it was sold to him as a Granite Motley clown. Now, from what I see, I believe she's possibly just a Granite rather than a Motley. But until we prove it out, we're just going to keep it as it is. The Motley gene is a fantastic gene. I think there's lots to be done with it. But the only problem with Motley is we now are in a stage of the evolution of our hobby at the moment is all about contrast.
Yeah.
Stark colors along with clean blacks, clean yellows, clean oranges, you know, or whites, grays, silvers, you know, like we like contrast. Motley does a lot of washing and fading out. Now, there was a gene back in the day called Fader, which came from Nerd. So there's a lot of genes out there. And back in the day, we were going for very reduced pattern clowns. We had the we had the one from Ralph Davies, which was, oh God, what was it called, man? It'll come to me in a minute. It'll come to me in a minute. But we were doing very reduced clowns, and we were doing very high wide pipes. Now it's like we've gone the opposite way. We want really busy clowns, and we want to see pattern on our pipes. So the Motley gene can sort of counteract that. Whereas the Granite will obviously put in a lot of speckling in. There is a super form, that particular Granite, there is a super form. So with that particular project, I'm looking forward more to the Granite than the Motley side, but we'll see what happens moving forward.
Okay, so that's exciting, though. Exciting stuff.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
100%. So what other exciting things, excuse the pun, exciting, have you got cooking away in your incubator at the moment that you can share? Are you a person that tends to sort of keep your cards close to your chest, or are you happy sharing what's going on?
I like to share information. I like to share the pairings. I'm super excited about the migraine project this season. We've got some amazing stuff. Some already in the incubator, some about to be laid. So I'm super excited about the migraine project. I'm not a secretive guy. I do like to hold, but when I I've hatched these bangs, there's only like two or three people that have seen them, you know? When the time's right, I'll show people once I've shed out and you'll see it in the video. But I'm not I'm not super secretive, you know? I like to share because if I get excited, everyone else gets excited. So that's what it's about, you know? So I can sort of share information if you like. So at the moment, we've just hatched some Hurricane Clown combos, OD Fire Mojave Hurricane Clown combos. We've hatched some chocolate OD Ultramels. We've hatched some Clown Pied stuff. We've hatched some Bang stuff.
Yeah.
I've got some Blackhead Het Sunsets, which have just shed out. So I've got just touch on them a bit. So there's lots going on. Just building blocks for the future.
Yeah, no, definitely. It sounds like there's lots of projects going on all at the same time, but it sounds like it's all going to be pretty incredible stuff, if it isn't already incredible. But like, yeah, it can only get better and better, can't it?
Yeah.
I must say, like you say, you are what person that likes to share. I have noticed that. I listened back to your podcast with Tom, and I listened way back to the episode where you were on Trap Talk, which was like in 2019 maybe. Yeah. And even then, like, you're saying the same stuff, like you're happy to share. That's what your YouTube's for, and obviously the Patreon nowadays. And you're more than happy to share information, which I really like. It's one of the reasons I follow you on Instagram and everything else is going on, is because you are so open. Because I find that there are a few breeders, I'm not going to name any names on anyone, that they might be around for a little bit, but they don't share what's going on. They're not sharing their pairings. They don't tend to reply to messages as well, whereas I think you are the complete opposite, which is why you are as popular as you are in the community.
It's really hard because, like, I try and respond to every single message. Single message. It's very difficult sometimes because I'm only human. I can miss a message. Yeah. You know, with everything that's going on, it's very easy to open a message and then, you know, you go to reply to it and someone calls you, so then you forget to reply back. So if ever anyone's sent me a message and they've seen that I've seen the message but I haven't replied, please don't take it personal. It's just something's come up and it's completely blown my mind. So I do try and reply back to everyone. It's not easy sometimes, but that's one of the main things that, you know, I struggled with when I was starting out, was I would reply, I would ask questions to certain breeders, and unless I was buying a snake off them, they wasn't really bothered, you know. Yeah. They wouldn't reply back. So
no, that's brilliant. So back, I know I'm chopping and changing my topics a little bit, but moving back onto the morphs that you've got going on at the moment, like your Bang, the Motley and stuff. If there are people listening that are sat at home, they've got their Royals, but they're like, you know what, I really want to get into something new. I'm not suggesting you tell us what to go and buy, because obviously that's personal preference for everyone. But if someone wanted to go and get something new to their collection, or find something new going on in the world for Royals specifically, what would your advice be to them? How would they decide what they wanted to add?
So it's... there's a couple of rules that, you know, I try and look towards. So we want to try and avoid making white snakes or black snakes. But there are certain white snakes out there which actually work, like the ivories work. Yeah. You know, you put leopard into ivory, makes a fantastic combo. You know,
definitely.
So all I say to people is, whenever they're working with whatever they've got, they need to be mindful about what they're crossing over to make an animal. You know, you don't want to be making a leucistic, like a blue-eyed leucistic, because it's going to be very difficult to see. Now, if you look at Special, which is under the blue-eyed leucistic range, you could make crystals. Crystals look fantastic. So you cross a Special with Mojave, you make a crystal. Yeah. So you could therefore go and make crystal clowns. You know, so the, you know, super phantoms, super Mojaves, not all leucistics are white, but you want to try and keep your collection sort of focused on, you know, you don't want to create an animal that you're not going to be able to tell what's in, you know, what's in it.
Yeah.
Look for animals.
I know all about that at the moment.
Dude, listen, we've all been there. I've got a white snake in my hatchling rack. It shouldn't be possible with the pairing that I did. There was only a bell complex on the opposite side, and it's not even a partho animal because it's a male.
Yeah.
So it's blown my mind, that is. So I'll have to revisit that pairing this coming season, but you know, look for genes which have good supers, like Blackhead, NG, OD, you know, something that's got a very reactive super. You've got stuff like, you know, you can look at stuff like Yellow Belly, which, you know, you've got Gravel, Asphalt, Spectre. Spectre's a very underrated gene. I've said this before on to my Patreons and on other lives. Spectre is a very underrated gene, very affordable. Yeah. And you've got a great super form. It's reactive to yellow belly. The super stripe project is fantastic. I've got some fantastic super stripe animals. So there's a lot out there. You don't have to go wildly expensive. Like the redhead now that I'm working with, when I saw the redhead combos last year in Tinley, I knew I had to get redhead in the collection because it was just what he was doing was just phenomenal. So that's got a good super as well. So, you know, chocolate's got a fantastic super. So always try and find the genes that have got a great super that mix well or play well with other genes without creating that negative reaction, you know. So, you haven't got to go big. You haven't got to go big expensive out there. There are some quality genes out there. Special's a fantastic gene, very reactive. Yeah. There's lots. I could say loads.
Yeah, no, like you say, there's thousands now, isn't there? So just I think that's some brilliant advice. And I think people need to I find at the moment that lots of people seem to be chasing like the hottest project. And I think if you work with something that like you're passionate about, it doesn't matter what other people think. Like if you're producing good looking babies, people will like them regardless of if it's hot or not.
Yeah. I mean I could give you a simple pairing straight away. You could go out there and get yourself a super stripe, okay, super stripe animal, and breed it to a monarch or an ultramel. You're going to get spectres and you're going to get yellow bellies, okay, which are het. You're going to hold them back and you're going to breed them back together.
Yeah.
Just from that pairing there, you're going to be able to produce something which not many people have seen, which is a super stripe ultramel or a super stripe monarch. Then if you wanted to take that a step further, you could go, well, okay, I want to put leopard in there. So I want to take that super stripe monarch or super stripe ultramel, and I'm going to breed it to this, I don't know, this confusion leopard, you know, and then you're going to make animals again because of it being a super stripe, it's an allelic animal. So, you know, if it's not a yellow belly, it's got to be a spectre, you know, and then you can take them animals back and breed them back to each other. So just through using that small little project, you can make some amazing animals. You know, you can take a blackhead and breed it to an ultramel. Hold back to blackheads, breed them across each other. You've now got a super blackhead ultramel. You don't see many of them.
No.
So very simple dynamics and pairing. Yeah. You don't have to go chasing, you know, the crazy projects, but just find something that you like, find something that excites you, and work it. You know,
Definitely. It's interesting that you say that, like, that you could almost really like simplify it and just stick with a couple of genes and just almost keep stacking. Like you say, you get the supers, you hold back the nicest ones, and you can like just go through that as opposed to what some people tend to do. And they're like, oh, I've got to stack 5-6 genes on top of a recessive.
I often speak to, you know, Patreons and people in particular, and, you know, I'll say to people, you know, think of it as like a gourmet meal. You know, we like soup. Everything's in soup, but it doesn't look very appealing, you know, but it tastes good, but it's got everything in it. Yeah, if I put a nice steak on your plate with some nice garnishing on the side, it's going to look amazing. It's going to taste amazing. It's got less, because less is more, and you're going to appreciate it a lot more. So sometimes producing animals with 6, 7, 8, 9 genes is actually a hindrance, because now when you produce an animal that has, let's say, a minimum of 4 genes and it's het clown, you're going to be limited to what you can really pair to it. So, okay, so you've got a clown male that you're going to pair to that female. That animal, if that animal has more than 2 genes, I'll guarantee you, first of all, you won't hit everything that you could hit because she'll probably give you 6 eggs. So you won't hit all the combos. But also, when you start stacking that many genes, it's going to be a nightmare trying to ID stuff. So it can create more problems as opposed to creating very nice looking animals. So sometimes less is more, and keeping it simple is also something that I say to people.
No, I think that's a brilliant bit of advice, to be honest. So moving away from ball piping slightly, the next thing I wanted to discuss with you was the Balls to You breeders meetings.
Yes.
I haven't managed to get along to one yet, but everybody I've spoken to that has attended is always like singing the praises really, really highly. Yeah. So how many have you hosted now? And how do you feel the shows have evolved from show one to the most recent show? And then what are your plans for the next one?
So we've got one Saturday, the 21st of October. We've released all the tables. All the tables are full. We've got 40 of the UK's top ball python breeders attending. We have new products, equipment, everything on display. The first show we did I was a bag of nerves.
Yeah.
Myself and the team, because it is a team effort. Without the team, there's no way these events could be put on.
Yeah.
There's a team of about 8 of us, and we've all got our own jobs, and we've all got, you know, we give to the BTU Breeders Club meetings. Yeah. The first Breeders Club meeting was amazing. We are very critical as a team, and within our Discord, within the Balls to You Discord, we do a live directly after the show. Well, on the Tuesday night after the show, which is Jordan's live, JM Royals live, he does on our Discord, and literally we tear it apart. We go, what could we do better? What was the good points? And literally, the first one we did, there was probably 2 or 3 things we could have done better, which we did improve in the second one. And then again, we had the second one, and then we went, what could we do better? And then so on and so forth, because it's all about, you know, you'll never walk out the pot out of, you'll never walk out through the doors and it be perfect. There's always going to be stuff that you want to correct. Like, for example, in the first one, we wanted to do, in the next one, we wanted to host a few more people. So we were able to get a few more tables in the venue. The second one was, it was a bit of a warm day. So, you know, even though the fans were on and the aircon was on, a couple of the people said, you know, it would have been nice if we had chairs outside, you know. Just very few things like that. But everything we do is for the community. So we host competitions, we host awards. So best booth, best in show. Awards are given out on the day. We host like a children's colouring competition, so the kids get an opportunity to do stuff. There's stuff there for the family. So, like, if your partner's not into reptiles, trust me, they will enjoy the day as well, because there's a seating area for them to chat and talk and mingle. One of the most important things is there's a bar in the building. Always important. So we really do think about the community as a whole. It's not about the breeders, it's about the community. So, like, for example, the vendors, for the vendors, they're allowed to come in between 8 and we open the doors about 8:30 in the morning. Yeah. And once they've set up, they have a few hours before the doors open at 12 to have a look around, have a chat, have a catch up, all that sort of stuff. So we make it as much about the vendors as we do about the people attending. So it's a whole community. We put together a package for the vendors. So they turn up in the morning. There's a little package for them on their tables just to say thank you. We really go as a community, as a team, we go above and beyond for the community. Yeah. So for us, the next one in October, it's going to be Halloween themed. So we're going to also do best booth. We're going to do best in show. We're going to do best dressed costume for the children, as well as the standard colouring in competition stuff. And we're also going to do best themed booth as well.
Okay.
We also have like a photo booth there as well. So everyone can have their pictures done, and it's just a real good day. Like,
it does sound brilliant.
Like
I said, every time I've spoken to anyone about it, they always say, oh, it's fantastic. You really need to get along. Like, it's very well organized. And one of the things that a lot of people have said, God, sorry, carry on.
Yeah, when Ozzy came, he walked away, because we also hire out the VIP section in the pub over the road from there. And when we left the venue, Ozzy turned to me and he said, "Gav, it's fantastic." He said, "What you are doing here is how it should be and what it's all about." So brilliant. For someone like that, someone who I look up to say that to me, it's just, yeah, it was massive. And the feedback as well from, like I said, all the people that attend, and even, like I said, their family members who aren't really into reptiles, they see what we're about, you know, the whole community vibe. So, yeah, they loved it as well.
No, that's absolutely fantastic. And so how long roughly does it go into planning one of the events? Because I can't imagine it's we'll sit around a table for an hour and then it's all good to go. So from, like, I suppose from when you had the idea in your brain to, like, the day of the first show opening, what sort of, how much time are we put into that as a team?
It's easily a 5-month project. And the reason why I say that is because literally we want to make sure it's right. Because we vet everyone. Here's the thing. You can go tomorrow to a show and great. They can open the doors to the public and great. The issue you've got is we do come under fire a lot from animal rights activists. And not only that, we also, we don't want to put the hobby and the community in a negative light. So if we start opening the doors to people who don't understand what we do, and they start coming in and seeing that the snakes in tubs, in small tubs, they automatically think, "Oh my God, this is cruel, da 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 da." So the one thing when we set up the B2U Breeders Club was we wanted it to be a club. We wanted there to be a place for the community that was a breeders meeting for the breeders by the breeders.
Yeah.
You know? And we vet every single person. Every single person that contributes.
Yeah, so that's not just vendors but ticket holders as well.
Everyone. Yeah. So we make sure that the people coming through the door are who they say they are. Now we have had to turn a few people away because they wasn't who they said they were. Actually, one person gave a false name, and it was a genuine thing. He didn't want his family to find out that he was buying reptiles. He was an adult, but his family, he came from a particular culture that didn't like reptiles. Yeah. So he had to keep it secret, and he brought a snake off a breeder that was going to be at the B2UBC, and we turned him away because. Yeah. He lied to us. Now, if your children are coming to the B2UBC, if your family are coming to the B2UBC, you want to make sure that the people who are in there are who they say they are.
Yeah, most definitely.
So there's a lot of stuff when people go, "Oh, I'm going to put on a show, I'm going to do this." Listen, if it was that easy, everyone would be doing it. Yeah, and the fact that we vet everyone, and if they ain't who they are, they're not coming in, they're not get a full refund, whether they've got a table or not. Every person that vends or attends, I pretty much know who they are. So the people who have got the tables, they are who they say they are. And obviously anyone that's coming through the door, if they're not, if I can't find them on social media, if my friends can't find them, if the team can't find them on Facebook, no. Unfortunately, it's not about that. It's about us having a responsibility for our community.
Yeah. To be honest, I think that's a brilliant way to run it. Like you say, that way you know exactly who's coming through the doors. You haven't got to worry on the day. You haven't got to be there sort of keeping your eye out for people up to no good because you know exactly who the people are. Yeah. You haven't got to worry about antis or anything like that. So have you had any issues with like animal rights people at all so far or nothing at all?
No, because the way we work it is it's a club. It's a members only club, okay? And it's a paid club. A lot of people think, well, I can do a club and you just join a Facebook group or you just join an Instagram page. It doesn't work that way. For it to be a club, there has to be some sort of membership. There has to be some sort of fee, regular paid fee, okay? So we make sure that everything is done by the by. So if the council or anyone come knocking the door, we can say, yeah, coming in, we've got all... We've dotted all the I's and crossed all the T's. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's a private event. we do things right. So if anyone comes in to attend, they haven't got to worry. It's a private breeders meeting function, and it's all there.
No, fantastic. And do you, with regards to the show, do you have any, like, I don't know what the word is, really, like a safeguarding rules, I guess? I've been to a few smaller local shows to me, and they have, like, tub sizing rules. They've, a few of them have got, like, banned morphs and things like that. Obviously, like, spider and stuff. Is that anything that you implement yourselves? Or?
So we set standards. So the way we do it is we want people to take pride. Let me run you through a few things. If you've got people displaying in tubs, little tubs, Braplast tubs, that's great. Someone's got to start. You've got to start somewhere.
Yeah.
But if someone goes out and spends £1,000 on banners, tablecloths, displays, you know, all the good stuff, they're obviously that they've got something about them. Do you know they want to, you know, have a standard, right? Yeah. So the one thing that I can categorically say is I go around and check everyone's animals. I may not go with a clipboard and go, I just want to check your animals, but I'm not stupid. And those people who are coming to the B2UBC, they know that this is the cream of the cream. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
you won't see the animals that you see at our show anywhere else. So they're in tip-top condition. If there is anyone that is starting out with Braplast tubs and all that sort of stuff, we'd like to see them improve on the next show. So everyone's got to start somewhere. And if it's someone's first show, I understand they're not going to go out and spend thousands of pounds on banners and so forth and so on and so on. But at least they can do is make sure that their animals are healthy. We can make sure that they're displaying, you know, they've got the right temperatures or that they're using heat guns. The one thing I will say is it's better stress level if an animal is too cold than it is too warm. If you put a reptile in a too warm environment, it'll stress out and cause loads of problems. So we do want to make sure that people take proper precautions. And these people who are vending at our or exhibiting at our event, these guys are veterans. And the guys who have just started out, they're looking over their shoulder and they're seeing the veterans going, wow, I'd love to have that display. And then the next time they come to vend, you can see they've made an effort. You know what I mean? They've got the tablecloths. They've brought a couple of banners. Yeah. So it's all about setting standards, because if I take pride in my display and I want to show who I am, hey, everyone, I'm Gavin at Balls to You. Come and look at my animals.
Yeah.
My reputation's on the line. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. So
if we do an event and you can't have banners and you can't tell people who you are and there's. Come on. Who's going to be held accountable? Do you know? Because I know what goes on at all these shows and at these events. So for us, we made it clear from the day one, the breeders that are coming, it's a breeder show for breeders. First and foremost, if we get someone new into the breeding circle that wants to be a breeder, then they can come along. They have to be escorted by a known breeder, if you like. So like a master and an apprentice. Probably the best way to put it, you know. We're more than happy for that. We just want the right people in our community. That's what it's about.
No, I think that's absolutely brilliant, to be honest. Yeah, and like I said, I know that we're not naming names, and I know the shows you're talking about where you can't brand yourself, but I always think that's really weird. Like, I'd much prefer to go and see, like, oh, that's Gav. I've followed him on Instagram, or that's Walkley Royals. I know who that is. I've seen them, and you know who you're buying from. Whereas if you go to somewhere where all the tables look the same, there's no branding, you don't know your ass from your elbow, really. You don't know who's who, do you? I think that's a brilliant way to go about it.
That's it. And like the way me and the team look at the B2UBC, it's like the Cannes Film Festival, you know. It's the place to be. If you want to go and see Stranger Clowns, Hurricane Clowns, Bang Combos, Lightning Pieds, Ultramel Pieds, Ultramel Clowns, Monarch Puzzles, you know, Lavender. You want to go and see some creme de la creme stuff?
Yeah.
That's the event you need to be.
It's not just people selling their excess stock. It's people showing off the top tier stuff as well.
Yeah, because we have that sort of, you know, best in show as well. So we want to promote healthy breeding. We want to promote good quality. Quality shines through, obviously. We want to promote all the good things.
Yeah.
And stay away from the negative stuff. Like when people post feeding videos or feeding pictures on Instagram or on social media.
Yeah.
That doesn't help us, because when people do that, anyone looking in just sees a poor, defenseless rodent.
Yeah.
And we all know how they feed. We all know what happens.
Yeah.
If it's done in the correct manner, like an educational program or in an educational video like on YouTube, okay.
Yeah.
But the one thing we've got to think is, you know, we need to stay in our lane. So if we start going, hey, everyone, look at me. I'm going to take a bite from a ball python, or I'm going to bare handle a cobra, you know?
Yeah.
You're just asking for trouble, you know? So we always try and promote healthy breeding, healthy husbandry, quality animals. And that's why the BTUBC, we always want to push the boundaries and push the standards so that there's the quality there. And we do want to do the same with other species as well.
Yeah.
You know, we want to bring in other people with other species. The problem we have to look at is we can't run. We need to walk first.
Yeah.
So if we can get this nailed down, then we can then obviously slowly but surely start to expand on that. And, you know, we've also got to be mindful, like, you know, there are a lot of breeders out there, not only in ball pythons, but in other species that have problem with their collection. So they have Nido, or they may have crypto in certain species, which is, it's a deadly thing. So again, being next to someone who animals may carry Nido or may carry crypto, you know, you've got to be careful, you know? So that's what we want to run. We don't want to run. We want to walk, and we want to just take the time, because again, you know, a lot of people have never heard of crypto. A lot of people have just learned about Nido, you know, stuff like mites, treating animals, all that sort of stuff. You know, we want to promote healthy, educational, and we can do that through the breeder meetings as well, and so on and so forth. So.
No, it sounds absolutely brilliant. I will have to attend. Unfortunately, I can't do the one in October, as I'm running around Tough Mudder, getting muddy and probably hurting myself. But I will definitely be on the lookout for the next one, because the whole thing sounds fantastic. It's exactly like if you were to go and ask 100 people, what do you want in the community? There's pretty much you've ticked every single thing off there. So I can't fault it at all. It's absolutely fantastic.
And I want to make it clear, it's not about balls to you. It's someone has to steer the ship, but without the team and without the people that attend and support it, it wouldn't happen. And that's why we do want to make it more a community thing, and more people get involved and all that sort of good stuff. So we do have dry goods there as well.
Yeah.
We'll have some equipment on display as well. So it's an all round good day.
Fantastic. So if people are listening and they do want to come, if you've still got tickets available, how do they go about getting a ticket?
So I will be releasing a video on YouTube this week, talking about the BTUBC, what it's all about, why, virtually what I've just gone over here.
Yeah.
But you will need to be a member of the BTU Breeders Club, which is accessible via my Patreon. It's £2.50 a month. Okay, that's all it is, less than a cup of coffee. You join it, you are then a member. Obviously, once we've checked out who you are and we're happy with who you are, then you are welcomed into the Discord, and then you have an opportunity to attend the events and buy tickets. If you've been in the B2U Breeders Club for a number period of time, I think it's 3 months, then you're eligible for a free ticket. The B2U Breeders Club Patreon is on my Patreon, but it's separate from the balls to you, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Some people don't want to be a part of the Patreon, that's fine, but they want to be part of the BTUBC. That's fine. That's there. That's completely separate. So they can join it via my Patreon. Just look it up, balls to you Patreon. You'll see he's creating a trusted community. Just look for the £2.50 tier, which is the B2U Breeders Club. Join that and you can have access, as long as we know who you are. And like I said, we vetted you and checked you out.
Yeah, fantastic. So it's nice and straightforward. Go on Google, search Bulls to You Patreon, and it'll all
straightforward.
Fantastic. Brilliant. So the last topic I wanted to touch on today is Viper World.
Yes.
I don't know the complete ins and outs of it, but I know you are very much involved in that. So what can you tell us about Viper World? I've been using the bedding since Ben, who Rocky Ridge Reptiles, became a distributor, because he's my boss and the stock's kept at work, so it's perfect for me. And I'm really impressed with it. So what is Viper World, and what's available, and how's it going?
So Viper World was born out of a need for us to have quality husbandry, quality bedding, quality products. It's kind of grown. Originally, we started out, we wanted it to be a bedding. And then we actually realized that there's a lot of stuff out there which we are missing as a community, not just for ball pythons, but across the whole reptile species.
Yeah.
Viper World is it's made up of four people, and we are the founders, if you like. We all have the same passion and the same drive. We wouldn't bring out a product if just based on monetary value. So for example, you know, you bring out a product and you're going to make loads of money. Our profit margins is very, very minimal. And the products that we bring, I currently will test for 6 weeks or more, depending. And if it's no good, it doesn't make the cut. The Viper Venom was, I've got some bottles up there. Viper Venom was basically myself. I made a cocktail. Well, I never made it, but I was speaking to the company and I told them exactly what we wanted. So it's designed from a breeder's aspect. Whether you're a keeper or a breeder, it's designed from that. So everything within Viper World is all about meeting needs. And we're constantly improving. We've just had a delivery of the new product, which we'll be releasing very shortly. And again, I've been testing that out for months, and it's a game changer.
So for those that are listening, the Viper Venom, that's the cleaning spray. So I've got a bottle of that I got from Ben. If nothing else, it smells incredible. It's brilliant. So I've been using concentrated F10. Obviously, watering it down, put it in a spray, but I've been using that for years. I've made the switch over to the Viper Venom probably a month ago now, and it's so much better. And that's not me blowing smoke up your ass at all. If there's urates on the side of the tubs, it seems to come off a lot easier with the Viper Venom. The tubs smell nicer. Everything just seems a lot cleaner.
Yeah. So the whole thing, you know, F10's been in the industry for years and years and years, and F10 as a commercial product, if you know what it's about, basically it puts a barrier down. Okay, so with F10, you put it down, you've got to let it dry. It has a certain surface to contact time limit before you can actually touch it or put something down. And what it does, it lays down a barrier. But it doesn't, and anything that lands on that, it will kill the bacteria. However, it doesn't kill it from a cleaning aspect. Okay, so when we then looked at Viper Venom, the smell aspect was the last thing, if that makes sense. So we wanted to make sure that you could use it neat. We wanted to make sure you could use it. So my favorite way of using Viper Venom is with a microfiber cloth, a wet microfiber cloth, sprayed on, wipe it all the tub around, and you can leave the tub on the side and you can watch it dry itself. So it dries very easy. It evaporates very easy. But when it evaporates, it also leaves what you would get with F10, like a barrier. It's also very good. We know it will also kill red mites and also various type of small mini insects. It will also, because then we added the eucalyptus smell, we also noticed that with the eucalyptus, which is what a lot of people don't realize, it's health benefits from not only a human aspect, but from a reptile aspect, it helps de-stress. So when you're using this product, it will also help de-stress the snake. So if, especially if your snake has, you know, laid eggs and you want to clean her and you've cleaned her all up and you put her in the tub, you clean it with this, it will help her chill out and calm down.
I did notice that. I pulled a clutch last week, and normally they're sort of, once you clean them, they tend to be hunting for their eggs for quite a while.
Yeah.
And I would say it was almost like half the time that they normally do, just from using this. I didn't even make the comparison, but I did notice it. But, it's very interesting.
So it's an all-round cleaner. You can use it on all your equipment, wood, stainless steel, plastic. It is there. It's an all-purpose cleaner for reptile keepers or breeders. So Viper Venom was very much designed, and, you know, a couple of times I went, no, can you add this? And they'd send me out another bottle and I'd try that and I'd be like, so basically we dialed it in till it was what you see today. So with the Viper world, we're here for the long haul.
Yeah.
We're not going to be millionaires.
Yeah.
But what we are going to do is we're going to make products which will stand the test of time. And, you know, we've got a new product which we're launching, which is Viperliptus, which is the pure eucalyptus oil. We've shown that off at some of the shows, and it is amazing. I've been using it for months, and I can't wait for people to use it, because the one thing, again, the smell. If you've got a reptile room and your other half walks in and they go, oh, God, Mark, oh, it stinks in here. You know what I mean? The smell is kind of the last thing, you know, but if we can make a product which does everything we need it to do and smells great, then when you're doing your cleaning, you walk into your room and it smells clean. You know, the thing with F10, it never had a smell to it. It never smelled clean. Viper Venom does do that with the Viperliptus. You're going to be impressed with what you can do with that. The when we show it off at the shows, people are like, where can I buy it? And we're like, we're just showing people it's coming soon, and it's literally landed this week. So I'm super excited for that one.
Brilliant. No, that's brilliant. And if people want to get Viper products, where can they get them?
Very simple, viperworld.co.uk. Very easy. Or they can obviously check it out on Instagram, Viper World as well. Or they can reach out to me and I can put them in the right direction. Or Bossrat, because obviously our partners with that is Bossrat. They are two, the Neil and Sam, fantastic people. We've just got the same energy, the same ethos. And myself, MJ Logo and Designs, along with Bossrat, we are the four. I was going to say the four horsemen. We are the we are the four founders of the company, and we love it. Yeah,
no, that's brilliant. Awesome. Right, we'll be going for an hour, so I am going to start wrapping up. So what I like to do normally, I normally do a Hall of Shame and a Hall of Fame, but I've decided that I'm going to drop the Hall of Shame for all the regular listeners. So my wrap-up question for you today, Gav, is I'd like to introduce you to the ReptiChat Hall of Fame, a place where I ask every guest to add something that they rate highly from the reptile world. It can be a product, a piece of advice, anything reptile-related, really, that you would add to the ReptiChat Hall of Fame. So what would you like to add?
Oh, I'm known for a few sayings.
Okay, you can only have one, so pick wisely.
Difficult. Okay. One of the sayings I'll say is fail to prepare, prepare to fail.
Brilliant.
So always prepare.
Fantastic. I've really, really enjoyed today's chat, Gav. Thank you very much for coming on. It's been
thanks for having me on. I've really enjoyed it. Thank you.
So before you go, the last thing to do, for want of a better phrase, it's time to plug yourself. So where can people find you?
Guys, please come and follow me and support me on Instagram and YouTube. Obviously, you can find me on those two platforms. If you want to know more, if you want to learn more, if you want to take it to the next level, if you want to take your collection to the next level and you want to know a bit more in depth and you want to become part of a trusted community, then by all means, go ahead, join the Patreon. You can start on the £5 tier and see if you like it. basically try before you buy. If you don't want to be part of the Patreon, that's fine. Please be a part of the B2U Breeders Club. It's not about me. That is about the community on a different level, on a wider level. So, yeah, Patreon, YouTube, Instagram, come and check me out. If you need any help, I'll do my best to help you.
Awesome. Brilliant. Thank you very much, Gav. And I will I'll catch up with you very soon, no doubt.
Appreciate you. Thanks for everyone tuning in as well. Thank you.
Cheers. Bye-bye. Cool. So that was Gav. I really, really enjoyed that episode, and hopefully everybody listening did as well. We've had loads of listeners all the way through the episode, so thank you very much. If you are still listening and you haven't subscribed on YouTube yet or followed on Spotify or Apple, wherever you're listening, please do so. It's a free feature, and it massively helps me out. That, and feel free to drop a comment as well, because you know, I like to hear what's going on, and I like to hear people's opinions. If you do want to support the podcast a little more than a like or a comment, there's a link in the show notes below to a website called Buy Me a Coffee, where you can donate the cost of a coffee towards the podcast. Every donation massively helps, as it's not the cheapest thing in the world to host it. So everything is appreciated. Anyway, that's enough of that. Last but not least, if you do want to keep an up to date with what's going on with me or the podcast, please go and check out my Instagram accounts. Obviously, it's at Ben's Balls for me at the Reptile Collection and my breeding and stuff, and at Reps Chat for the podcast. All the links are in the show notes below. So that is all from me today. All that's left to do is say goodbye, and I will see you next time. So thank you very much, and goodbye.